All right, guys, here's the deal. Before I even start this today, what I want to do is I want to give out the Veterans Crisis Support Line. And the reason for that is if anything we say gets you in a position where you feel that you need help immediately, I want you to go ahead and call them, because I am not a doctor. I am not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and I will attempt to help you in the best ways that I can, but they're better at it than I am. So it's 1-800-273-8255. And if you call and you're a veteran, press the number 1, and they will get you immediately on the line with somebody who can help you. And that's it. So let's go ahead and start the program. 1-800-273-8255. Don't forget, 1-800-873-8255.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Post Combat Normal. This, as always, is your host, Joe Morgan. I'd like to upfront apologize for my voice today, and I'd like to welcome to the show from Alpha K9 here in Sacramento with me is Kevin Cameron. Kevin, how you doing today, brother?
How's it going, Joe?
Oh, another fun day, man. I obviously, Alpha K9, everybody who can hear the name obviously knows it has to do with dogs. What exactly is you guys' mission? What exactly you guys do?
Our mission is to provide post-traumatic stress service dogs free of charge to veterans, first responders, battered women, kids, people who put their lives on the line to give us the freedoms that we have every day.
Okay, outstanding. Now, how exactly did you get into that? What's your background that made you think that that was a great idea? How did that come about?
Well, it all started back in the military when I got voluntold to go do canine. so I was actually pushing dogs in the Army. And then once I got wounded and medically discharged myself, I started doing dogs out here. But what really got me started was I was stationed up in Fort Lewis, Washington with my brother. And we were up there living together, living a life. I came home one day and he had a gun in his mouth. And found out that he had severe post-traumatic stress. We got him taken care of. And the military up there said that he needed a service dog. We found out that it was going to be $30,000 to $50,000 out of our pocket, and a 2 to 4 year wait. These guys could not wait another day, let alone 2 to 4 years. And there's no way that even on 2 military salaries were we able to afford $30,000 to $50,000. Found out it was just a giant money making scheme. So I trained my brother's first service dog, and I've been training service dogs ever since.
Well, that's outstanding. I love hearing that it was somebody close to you. Everybody who served right now, who was in our wars anyway, I don't know about every war in the past, but it was in Iraq and Afghanistan. Everybody who's been on those fun desert locations has known somebody who's either severely close to doing it or has committed suicide. And, you're just not a part of a battalion. You're not a part of any unit that hasn't affected in this war. And so it's nice to hear other guys out there, trying to combat it, because like you said, it is in a lot of cases, it seems like a big giant money making scheme when people are doing things, and it doesn't need to be. They need the help. They need the help immediately. So,
yeah, and it's crazy. The VA actually puts out a statistic that it's 22 vets attempt or commit suicide every day and another 45 attempt it. At the last VA symposium I went to, they actually said it's more like 22 an hour.
Yeah, I was going to say that study that shows 22, one of the faults in it was only the first 21 states that reported, and the other 29 have not even put in their numbers yet. And those two states, the two biggest states for military are California and Texas, and they're not even on that list. So, yeah, it's absolutely crazy when you get the real numbers. You know, I love that people at least have the hashtag 22, because at least it shows awareness, but it's just not a reality. It's a lot higher than that, and it's a scary number. Yeah. Even 22 is way too many.
The stats are even worse than that, because even though it's only 21 states, but it's only the people over the age of 27, I believe, and it's only from the first few years of the war. It doesn't even count any other military action that we're involved in.
Yeah, it's one of those numbers that everybody loves to throw out. And like I said, I hate to get into this stuff too deeply, but yeah, when you dig a little deeper, you find out that it's a lot more. And suicide isn't the only problem. It's also withdrawal. It's also just running away from reality. Not everybody kills themselves, but if you're hiding in the woods and you're not talking to your friends and family, you are dead also. And to be able to give them an animal that can allow them back into society, you're helping them stay alive, even if it's not an actual suicide. And So what exactly do you train the dogs to do? How do they help guys? Like, what's the actual, what does the service dog do, I guess is the right term?
Well, once we rescue a dog out of the shelter, we actually train these dogs to do a couple different things. In the military, we have a platoon-sized element, which is roughly 30 people that has our back. And we're taught that, you know, when we watch our lane, the guys to the left and right of us watch theirs. Well, when we get out of the military, we don't have those 29 other people that have our back. So we take on that burden ourselves. So what the dogs actually allow us to do is, while we're overwhelmed trying to deal with the environment, watching windows, watching doors, waiting for all these wonderful bad things to happen to us that we've been trained to do and have had to deal with for the last umpteenth years, the dog, we teach these veterans that when a dog doesn't care about it, they don't have to. The dog's so aware of its environment that we teach the veteran to watch the dog. And the dog is going to actually identify anything approaching, loud noises. That's going to let him know when people are walking up on his blind sides, things of that nature. The other thing the dog does, it actually is trained to detect the signs and symptoms of stress. It's actually an odor and a pheromone that we produce. And the dogs are trained to come up and get loved on and be that distraction. So when we're stressing about the 30 million things going on in our environment at that second, the dog will actually come over and be that distraction. So now we're just focused on one thing. We can take a knee, collect ourselves, and continue on with our day.
It's really amazing how they have that sense. And I have an untrained dog, don't get me wrong. I've considered coming down to you guys on a handful of occasions. I was actually offered a dog not even a couple months ago by a friend of mine you're working with through the Marine Corps Motorcycle Club. And I couldn't do it because I already have two very untrained dogs and I don't want to bring a trained animal into the circus that I currently own. But even my untrained dog can sense when I'm in a place where I'm about to lose it. And I don't know how she does it. And you just told me now. And now I understand it's pheromones, but I had no idea. She knows sometimes before I do. And I can only imagine that with the way you guys train them, they must even be faster on it because she is able to jump up on the bed and whether it's love on me or, you know, whatever the case may be, she can distract me from something in a heartbeat. And that's, like I said, that's with no training, with no concept of what I'm even doing with her. And so I can only imagine, again, you guys even take it to another step. But how exactly, I've heard people say that they move people away from you and that they do other things. Is that accurate?
There's a difference between training a stupid dog trick and training a dog to mitigate a disability. One of the things the American Disabilities Act says is that dogs got to be specifically trained to mitigate your disabilities. Well, a lot of dogs are, there's a lot of good dog training organizations out there that are trying to train service dogs, but there's a practicality side of it. I have both my hands. I don't need a dog to turn on a light switch for me. Dogs that are trained to circle around you and get people out of your way when they're walking behind you is a good idea, but it's not very practical for if you're standing on a bus. What the dog's going to do is sit around and do circles in a seat. And so it turns into a marketing scheme for a lot of these organizations. But the reality of it is, as long as the dog is mitigating your disability, that's what it's supposed to be doing.
Okay. So now, what exactly should a guy do who thinks, I mean, what would be your qualifications? What would be the needs? How exactly would somebody find out about not only your organization, but any good dog trainer? How can you decide who would be a good one? Because, you know, we have listeners in every state of the union and we have guys even overseas. And obviously a guy in, you know, Britain, Great Britain can't get a hold of you. So how would he know that his local dog trainer who says that he's going to get him a service dog is actually able to do what it's supposed to do?
Well, the first off is no matter what, a service dog is supposed to be a highly obedient dog. These guys need to go look at who they're getting dogs from. Is it some guy out of the backyard who's only been doing this for a couple of years? Is this a hobbyist? what is their actual background in doing it. But more importantly, they need to go look at their dogs. Any dog trainer is going to have their own dogs, and if the dogs don't listen to the trainer, why is your dog going to listen to you? And they need to be practical about it. It's great that the dog trainer can teach your dog to do two cartwheels and backflip before it goes outside to take a crap, but the reality of it is it what you need?
Okay. What exactly would you say? I mean, you already hit some of it. It's just the emotional connection to the dog and the dog having awareness of his situation. Are there any other abilities that the dog should have? You said, it's awareness level and its ability to sense your feelings. Is there anything else at all that they should be looking for?
The dogs should be well-mannered, well-tempered. Dogs don't need friends, but dogs should be actually indifferent toward other people and other animals. They don't need to be a nuisance in public. They don't need to be jumping up on things. They shouldn't be excessively barking. They should be physically healthy. They shouldn't be looking like they have mange or losing all their fur. These guys need to make sure they know where their dogs are being got from. I mean, why would you spend $10,000 on a dog if they're pulling it from the shelter? That just doesn't make sense.
Well, and that was one of the questions I had. You mentioned that you rescue the dogs. A lot of these places that I've looked into, they want you to buy a purebred this or that, generally a Malinois or a Shepherd, but whatever. You know, they're trying to charge you this exorbitant fee for it. But you just said you pull them from the shelter. Is there an age cutoff? Is there something that you're looking for in the shelter dogs that lets you know that it's going to be a good dog?
All our dogs come from shelters and rescues, all of them.
Okay.
And because of that, it is why we got this. I mean, I told you before the national average is $30,000 to $50,000. We got the price tag down to about $5,000 in about a 60 to 90 day training period. The reason we did that, because we're pulling out adult dogs. Dogs are generally between 1 and 3 years old. And as long as they're not aggressive toward people or animals and they're healthy, then we can just about train any dog to be a service dog for post-traumatic stress. So it's not really all that complicated. You don't need a purebred dog because, quite frankly, there's no difference between a purebred and a mutt. And not for service dog work. You're not. All these dogs are neutered, so you don't need the pedigree paperwork. Pedigree is not a guarantee of health. Pedigree isn't a guarantee of workability. It's just a good idea.
Okay, and again, it's just something that, you know, whenever you're looking at the executive protection dogs, or you're looking at all this, every one of them talks about how their dog has this lineage. And I always thought it was funny because, again, every dog I've ever owned has come from a shelter. I never have considered in my life spending thousands and thousands of dollars. I don't understand it. There's plenty of them. So that was really my question personally is, you know, you can use any dog, and I couldn't imagine it not working. I assume, is there a size that you need it to be? I mean, I can't imagine a Chihuahua helping you feel safer, but I don't know. Does it work?
So what we do is, because we work off the military's training standard, generally a dog less than 35 pounds is not going to meet our training standard. We require all the dogs to have all four of their paws on the floor at all times. They don't need to be in your lap and none of that craziness. So generally we see a lot of shepherds. We see a lot of labs, golden retrievers, mixes like that. But generally anything over 35 pounds, we'll do the trick.
Okay. And there's no-goes on pit bulls or anything like that?
You know, pit bulls can be great service dogs. They really can. Pit bulls, Rottweilers, all those can be great service dogs. The problem with it is they're just socially unacceptable.
Yeah.
They're great dogs. They're very loving, but the general public's just afraid of them. And a lot of vets would get a lot of shit for having them.
No, I agree with you. I think it's an unearned reputation, but they do have a reputation, and that's why I asked, because I kind of figured it would be rough to walk into a McDonald's with a pit bull on your hip. You would probably be asked to leave a lot faster than a guy who had a lab wearing a coat. If you have a lab on, you know, with his service vest on, you're probably going to get more of a positive reaction, or a shepherd, than if you had a pit bull or a chihuahua. And I'm not saying that because I don't want people out there who are listening to not pick those animals. I'm just saying, be aware of what you're doing and be aware that it doesn't matter what you think. It matters what the entire world around you thinks also. And to avoid that kind of stress, you might want to think about getting a dog that fits in better to the role that they're playing.
And that's really what it is. I mean, even us, we shy away from doing bully breeds. It's not that we don't train them, but we try to shy away from them just because we don't want our vets and the people we're helping having more anxiety over their dog than they need to.
Now, on the service dog note, do you guys have special vests, tags? Is there something? I see a lot of people. I'll walk into Walmart now. I'll walk into the mall now. I'll walk in somewhere. And, man, I'll see a dog everywhere where, you know, 20 years ago you never saw one. Is there a special and they don't have a coat on. They don't have any kind of markings. Is there something that you do to identify it as a service dog and a more recognizable way of doing that?
So federal law actually says that they're not required to have any vests, harnesses, identification, or anything like that. What we do is we make sure all our dogs are vested. They have patches that say service animal on it. We provide all our guys an identification card because even though it's not required, it helps eliminate a lot of the crap these guys are going to get every day. We provide them validation paperwork and the whole nine yards just to make their life easier. Even though it's not required, it's just one of those things that we do for uniformity purposes.
Okay. Well, and again, I don't think it's necessary, but I love the idea because anytime you can mitigate yourself from being in a situation where you're arguing as a PTSD combat vet, you're going to save yourself a lot of a headache. And it doesn't matter that it's not legal or you don't have to legally do it, I should say. It matters that, again, you know, and again, I'm talking to my audience here, Kevin, not you. But, I mean, and again, it's the idea that if you can stop that one interaction from happening negatively, you're going to save yourself at least one day, if not more, of, you know, pissed off combat mode. And if you can do that, you know, you're helping yourself out a lot. Now, how can people get a hold of you? I talk to a lot of vets, obviously, on this show, but some of the people who are listening are looking to help. How can people help you get more dogs in more people's hands?
Oh, my God. The biggest thing we could always use right now is funding. I mean, but anything helps. Cleaning supplies, bleach, things of that nature. Anything we can helps. If they can go, directly to our website at alphacanine.org. And there's always a list of ways to donate on there. They can email us at info@alphacanine.org. Or they can give us a call at 916-400-4337. And if we don't answer the phones because we're busy training dogs, but we'll get back to everyone and we can use any help, anything helps.
Outstanding. I do have one other question that I didn't hit earlier. How many dogs do you go through in a year? How many vets do you generally help right now? And what's your end goal? Do you have a goal of maybe, I hate the word franchising, but I can't think of a better way. Do you have a goal of like maybe, you know, selling this concept around the country or is it just a local thing? What is your end result that you're looking for?
So right now we have dogs in 38 states and through Canada. We're actually the largest provider of post-traumatic stress service dogs in the country, and we're a small crew of about 10. We provide about 200 dogs a year. We've actually provided about 1,000 since we started this program, and we've yet to lose a single vet. One of the things that we're trying to do is not sell this off, but expand it so we have small little alpha canine locations in the major states and major cities. That way, vets don't have to travel across the country. The veterans who know how to train dogs or just trying to help their brothers and sisters out can go someplace local and get their dogs squared away.
Outstanding. You've already pretty much hit everything I can think of. Is there anything else at the end of this you'd like to add for the vets out there that might want to contact anybody? You know, is there anything else, basically?
Just as long as these vets understand that needing a hand isn't weakness. You know, PTSD doesn't mean that you're screwed up or you're weak. I mean, most of us don't like going to sit call when we're in the military. All it means is that we have to learn to adapt to a new environment. And if they need a service dog or they think one might possibly help them, they can feel free to contact us. And most of my trained staff are combat vets. So they can come talk to us and we can walk them through to see if a service dog's even something that would potentially help them out. So as I said, they can just give us a call or shoot us an email. Find us on Facebook.
Perfect. Well, again, thank you, Kevin, for coming on, and it has been a pleasure to talk to you, man.
Thank you very much, Joe.